When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another edition of Children of Song, the podcast that explores what it must have been like to grow up surrounded by music. For those who might be joining us for the first time, we're speaking, of course, with musicians whose parents made it big in the music industry, or those artists who started playing and making music when they were still very young. For these talented artists, making music is as often as natural as breathing. Well, today's guest kind of fits in both of those categories. His daddy served in the Air Force, but in his spare time, he played the leads in various musicals and plays. Meanwhile, his son was in the audience soaking it all up and deciding if maybe he wanted to sing and entertain people when he grew up. He'd get the chance as a teenager in college, wowing the spirited students of Texas Tech, and figuring he might have a future singing in front of big crowds. We'll find out how he made his way from Waco to Lubbock and beyond, and we'll learn how he made a name for himself and see who he influenced along the way. But first, I'm Brad Newman, the producer of this series, and once again, I'll be taking on the hosting chores for what should be an interesting look at the life of what some people have called the Springsteen of the Southwest. We're bringing this to you from our podcast studios in Midtown Manhattan. Rick Buser is our engineer. So no matter who you might think he might sound like, I personally hear more John Cougar than Springsteen, especially on hits like Wrapped and Wave on Wave. But one of the things you can consistently hear from his peers and the young artists coming through the ranks behind him is that he's as authentic and generous as it gets. With that, he's produced a huge body of work, including 10 studio albums. 14. He's had 14. Check that. He's had 15 singles that have charted. He's been nominated for 3 Grammys. He's younger than me, and somehow he's got a tribute album coming out in May celebrating his biggest hits. I don't know if I like that or not. Please welcome Pat Green to the podcast.
What's shaking, Brad? Sorry, I didn't mean to correct you.
That's all right. Listen, we got to have our facts straight. I mean, that number is all over the place on the internet. Wikipedia has you as 7.
Yeah.
You know?
And nobody knows where I'm from either. I was born in San Antonio, though.
Right. You've got a restaurant there, right?
I do have a restaurant there.
Okay. Yeah. And you got one in Dallas or Fort Worth?
One in Dallas and one in Houston as well.
Yeah.
Work.
Quite the entrepreneur.
I don't know. Forced entrepreneurial.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I've done some work, and some of the young artists who you have really influenced really look at you and your business acumen. I mean, you know, more than anything, you've obviously, to the people on the outside, you influence them through your music. But
yeah.
But behind the scenes, there's a lot of work done there too.
I don't know what to say to that. I love working. I love the process of creation more than anything on the planet. And so whether I'm good at something or not really doesn't enter my mind until until it's too late.
Well, let's go back a little bit. So you're a military brat.
I am indeed. Yeah, we moved around quite a bit. My dad was an Air Force pilot, a brilliant man, absolutely one of my favorite human being other than my own wife and children. But my brother George as well, is both of them fighter pilots. So it's more than just, to me, you know, when I look around and I see people in the military, to get a seat in a fighter jet, in one of those crazy, insane zillion-dollar airplanes, it's pretty high up on the ladder.
Oh, yeah.
You don't just hand those keys over to anybody.
Well, those guys are rock solid, too. I got to spend some time with some of those and other stories I've done here at the channel, and, I mean, it's hard to shake them. It's hard to shake those guys.
Yeah, they eat glass for breakfast. It's uncomfortable, really.
But I guess in his spare time, if you can get spare time when you're a military fighter pilot and moving around, he was actually the lead in various musicals.
A lot of them, and great, too. It was definitely the to see a man, obviously, my father, that I not only admired, but to see him perform was kind of odd. I didn't feel uncomfortable, but it was, you know, he was the lead. He was the guy standing in the front, and I don't know, for some reason that struck me.
Well, with Harold Hill, too, in Music Man, I mean, he's such a con man, and it's all like, you know.
Starts with a P and ends with a T, and it stands for pool.
Yeah, I listened to that this morning, because I wanted to refresh it. I played Winthrop as a kid. I had that lisp, wonderful, you know, going for that. It was such a fun show, you know.
Yeah, great show.
With Amaryllith, you know. Yeah. That was played my sister, you know. And, I mean, but it takes so much charisma. To play that almost seems to be kind of for a guy who's like steady and can man a fighter jet, that seems to be, you know, such a contradiction.
Yeah. But he's so studied. I mean, that's the thing. That was it. It was just he spent an awful lot of time learning that, and playing Henry Hill, playing Cyrano was my favorite one that he ever did, with the big fake, you know, prosthetic nose, and he had to learn how to sword fight, and he had to speak up different languages and crap like that. I mean, you know, it's just, to me, that was his opus. If there's such a thing, there's really no such a, whatever.
Right.
It was just fun to watch him be. I loved watching him be other people. All these people that lived inside him is really kind of what. That's where I am on stage too. I don't feel like me.
And do you think that's where you got your storytelling ability? Because I think that is what separates you. I mean, people say words like authenticity, but I think, and I'm not saying you're not, but there's something about a true storyteller, because they take you on a journey, and it allows you to kind of trust them. And they, in order to go with them, you got to trust them a bit, you know?
It's the here to there, for sure. Yeah. It is the here to there. And I look at guys, if you know, like Lyle Lovett and Springsteen, you want whoever you want to put in there. But delivery is really the mechanism.
What was the early music that you were listening to? Who were you really influenced by? And
right.
Yeah, did you think this is something I want to pursue?
I was a big I loved Jim Morrison. I think that. Telling more than one story at a time is fun for me, right? So if there's two or three stories within one song, that makes me happy.
Right.
And Jim was just so all over the place, and there's lots of reasons for that. But I'm kind of in that same vehicle. I mean, I love the everyday man that a guy like Billy Joel was when I was a kid. I loved how Paul McCartney and the Beatles could be Revolver and Sgt. Pepper's. I loved that. I mean, there's more than one. If you really pay attention to the great artists out there, they all have more than one person in there with them. There's
so you really can see the influence of your dad. There was something there about those many characters was something that you really grabbed onto. So you're 18 and you and you head out to Lubbock, right?
Yeah, best 10 years of my life.
I got only 10 years to get
through.
I took
a couple off here in the middle.
Of course, we're talking about Texas Tech there. And you're 18 years old. Who gives you the guitar, and what kind of songs did you start writing at first?
I was such a big Jerry Jeff Walker, Robert O'Keefe, Willie Nelson fan when I started writing. Those were the biggest, by far the biggest, when I started writing. Now, obviously, I'd had all the other experience that everybody else does growing up with music, but those were the guys, and that was what was cool at that time. Mm-hmm. At Texas Tech, that was, you know, when I went to school, I didn't know how to play guitar. I'd never picked up a guitar until I was 18 years old, and who put the guitar in my hand? I did. I walked across the street on Broadway to Broadway Music, and oddly enough, I know, great name. And I bought a Washburn guitar. I I don't know. I think I play as well now as I did 6 months in.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm not kidding, man. I studied so hard. I failed out. I flunked. I got a 2.3 my first year, my first semester, because all I did was sit in the basement of Coleman Hall and play guitar.
Right.
I didn't go to school.
Let me hear, if you can, go back maybe an early song or something. Just something to give us a sense of, you know, where that did people could they hear some potential early on?
I don't know. So Jerry Jeff Walker. Do you remember what's the record that Jerry Jeff did? Viva Tlingua. This is the first song I ever wrote. Yeah. Viva Tlingua was made in Luckenbach. I got married in Luckenbach. Just was the special place to me, right? And anyway, so I totally stole from him. Yeah. Up and nabbing, here we go. Off again to the rodeo, and I sure got a lot of little things on my mind. One's a song I just started writing, and the other's a girl I just finished fighting. Well, she said it was me, oh God, I just don't believe her. If you want to know where I'm coming from, just sit right there and I'll tell you, son. The life I lead ain't as wonderful as it appears. Here I go again, singing in this dive. Don't stop bearing my cereal, but it's keeping me alive. Gave up on Nashville, still got my show, yeah, but here I go. Once again. Here I go. You have to have that walk down, right? Yeah, that.
Well, that's great, though.
Right? You got to have all that stuff there.
And I love the storytelling so early, really coming on. Just, I mean, it's great.
I love it. The Jerry Jeff told me a story one time when we were living in Austin, my wife and I, and we went over. Susan and Jerry had us over for dinner, and blah blah blah. And I was saying, hey man, tell me about Bojangles, and tell me how much fun that was to write. He goes, well, I was in jail, evidently, right? So knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you. Okay, so that's, you can see all those same movements that I have in that song. Anyway. So I said, hey, have you noticed how Bojangles and Piano Man are the same?
Sure.
The same, right?
Yeah.
So sing us a song, you're the Piano Man. Sing us a song tonight. All in the mood for a melody, right? Got us feeling all right. I knew a man, Bojangles, and he danced for you. Right? It's this loop. Anyway, so I was telling him, I was like, man, have you noticed that? He goes, yeah. As a matter of fact, he was playing at the Billy Joel came to play the Frank Irwin Center there in Austin. And Jerry Jeff went to see the show, and they were going to do Bojangles together. And that came up in conversation that night. So Billy Joel tells Jerry Jeff, says, man, I'm sorry, I stole the melody from your song. He goes, no, I got it from McCartney.
So, that's hilarious. And let's have our lawyers talk about this.
Whether or not that's true, I could care less, but that's the story that happened that night, and we were all drinking and having fun. So.
That's great. You know, you mentioned your wife a little bit. You know, you've written some wonderful songs about her. One of my favorites
all
is...
All of my songs are
yeah.
Her.
Really?
Yeah.
She creeps in all the time?
She's a creeper.
I like Crazy.
Oh, I love that song.
That's a wonderful story, too, about, you know, because I think with artists and musicians, you know, you're gigging. If you're making money, you got to gig. You got to get out there.
You keep dropping off the bills.
And so the story, the way I heard it, is that, you know, you came home one night after a gig and... Yeah. Carter sleeping, huh? You finished that for me.
Yeah, we didn't have anything, you know, like anybody when you're young, and she was in law school and working for the Speaker of the House. She was an intern for the Speaker of the House there in Austin. We were just very fortunate, you know. But it didn't have any air conditioning at that time, and it was hot, and it's always hot in South Texas. But anyway. We had a swamp cooler. You know what a swamp cooler is? It's like a pan of water.
Yeah.
Above like a rotating fan.
Right, right, right.
Right. And so the it's evaporative cooler, basically. Anyway, it would bring down the temperature at least 2 or 3 degrees. So I came home from gig, and she was sleeping on top of the covers, and she was wearing one of my button-down shirts and white cotton panties, and it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever laid eyes on. And I was standing at the foot of the bed. We still have the bed. Actually, my son sleeps in that bed now. Not with us, but anyway, I was standing there, and she kind of leans her head up, you know, like as you do, you know, put your chin down where you can kind of, you can hear what I'm saying. She goes, she's caught me staring at her. She goes, cut it out. And I was like, yeah, yes, ma'am, right away. But it just never seen anything that pretty. Still don't remember seeing anything that pretty. Yeah, she's the one that makes it right, right? I went into the den, and she made me close the door because I was too loud. I'm always too loud. I saw you early this morning, sleeping all dressed in white. For a moment I thought you were an angel, come to take me home alive. You woke up and you caught me staring, smiled and said, fool, cut it out. You said that I must be crazy. I said, crazy about you, and I kissed you on the mouth. And if I am truly crazy, don't you know I like my life not away? And if I'm really going on out of my mind, hop on board and make your getaway. And you can do that, not that same Jerry voice. Yeah. And you can do all this too. Whatever you want. Country music, baby. That's what we're here for.
Again, you know, you seem a little young to have a legacy album.
Right.
But then I listened to it.
That wasn't my decision.
Well, I tell you, it's coming out this May. It's called Dance Hall Dreamin'. And the artist you got to sing that on the album is kind of a mentee of yours. And I think he's a really interesting guy.
Sweet
Aaron
man.
Watson.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's
great.
A young man who sang Crazy on the album. And you know, I got to speak to him this week, and here's what he said.
Wonderful.
About what you've meant for him.
You know, I mean, I was going to see Pat play back in the day when I was literally still learning guitar chords. And, you know, when my dream of being a country singer was brand new, and, you know, we'd go see guys like, you know, I saw Garth, and I saw George, and Kenny Chesney, and a lot of those guys, but there was just something different about what Pat was doing, you know. And I think it was a combination of the energy that he had on stage. His songs were real songs, you know. It wasn't like he was singing songs that, you know, a bunch of songwriters wrote in some, you know, in a cubicle on the fourth floor at some publishing company in Nashville. You know, these are songs that this guy wrote you know, on the road in between his tour dates. And so we'd go see Pat play, and man, it was just, for me, it was very inspiring. And he plowed a bunch of roads for a lot of us Texas artists that were coming in right behind him.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, that's something, isn't it? What's it like to hear that?
Man, Aaron's just an authentic human being. He really, you can tell that he's, I like people when you can tell that they're telling the truth just when they talk to you. And I think that's really the key to songwriting, by the way, is just being able to tell people exactly what you feel.
Right.
And then the rest is kind of falls in line. But Aaron is, I swear to God, the sweetest man. He, I've never heard him cuss once in my life. Not once.
But you spend a lot of time with them, I think, behind the scenes, too. And
no doubt.
And they learn from you. They've watched you. They've watched you when, you know, they were coming up, and at the end of one of these gigs in one of these big dance halls, you stayed and you talked with people and you talked with the fans, and you didn't run out and get on the bus.
I've done that plenty too. I've run away.
Really?
For sure.
Well,
everybody,
I mean,
has.
You know, listen.
But if you don't put your hands on the people, it's really hard to get a sense of what they're looking for.
Here's another interesting story Aaron said when he was watching you after a gig you guys had played together. Take a listen.
I remember one time we played a show with him and somewhere in East Texas. I think it was Tyler. And I think I was like the first artist of many to hit the stage that night. I think I played for about 30 minutes, and I think they paid me about $250. And after the show, we went back to get paid our $250, and we walked in on Pat getting paid, and they were definitely paying him more than $250. And, I mean, there was literally just stacks of $100 bills everywhere. And I remember going, man, you know, wow, that's incredible. This guy's turned this thing into more than just songs. He's turned this thing into a huge business. Pat's independent spirit really influenced me on the music side of things and from a business perspective.
From an aspirational perspective, I mean, you saw a guy who worked himself up from nothing pulling in a lot of $100 bills there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's the American dream. Music's a unique thing. I think it's about the only thing where you can make something from nothing. And that's definitely what Pat did.
I mean, it is interesting. I mean, sometimes what you're doing has more effect on people than you may realize.
Yeah, the dream becomes reality. It's that's fantastic. And the guy who taught me how to do the music business was Jerry Jeff. He, without a doubt, he was the one that, how do you monetize it? How do you use your, you know, this brain that everybody was given one of those and. How do you use that, you know, to actually go out there and do it? And Susan, his wife, a wonderful, beautiful woman, that I always told people that she'd take a sledgehammer to kill a fly. It was just tough. I mean, she knew how to make the business for their family, for Jesse Jane, their daughter, and for Django, their son, and for all the people that were around them. Anyway, that's what they gave me.
You know, there's a real loyalty with Texas artists. And I think sometimes you get pigeonholed.
To a fault, yeah.
Yeah, but you get pigeonholed, too, in that Texas music sound, too.
I'll take
you?
It.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting. I mean, and it is, but it's a very tight fraternity. I find more than, you know, I mean, the artists in general are stick together, but it seems like.
Yeah, but it's not pasty, is it? It's not fake.
No.
It's not.
I think it's real genuine. I mean, I think these guys really, really care about you, and they listen, you know, and they're interested. And the thing is, they also have that entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, they go out and to get it done. They've got to get their own labels.
No,
I mean,
choice,
Aaron's done that.
Yeah. Oh, and Aaron's doing great. He's on a roll right now, man. That guy's smoking hot right now. The shows that we do together, I don't care if I'm opening act, closing. I don't care. I just, any show with him. Anything with him right now. He's on such a roll. It's fun.
earlier in your career, you wrote a lot of songs by yourself. But now
bad
you,
songs by oh, myself.
Come on now. But as you got Pardon older, me. You you've collaborated with people like Lyle Lovett. I mean, I love Girls from Texas. If we're talking about,
I don't want to play that song.
Why?
Because it's. I don't want to play it. Because I didn't write it.
All right.
But it was fun to record with Lyle.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. What song do you want to sing for us next?
I was actually thinking that up just now. Imagine that, a 20-year-old, 20 years in the music business. No, Lyle was, it was so cool to record with Lyle because when I was growing up, you know, in and around, you know, my father and all this music, my brother and you know, they were always just, hey, you gotta check out Lyle Lovett. And I was like, man, it was too deep for me. It was just too much.
Right.
And then I got it. You know, I came of age and I understood later what precision meant. And if you really want to make the comparison between like a guy like Sting and a guy like Lyle Lovett, I mean, the jump off is not very big, uh-huh. right? But from me to Lyle Lovett, it's huge, right? And so for me to get to go in and sing Girls from Texas, man, wonderful.
Georgia are sweeter than peaches. The ones from California are made for bathing suits and beaches. Minnesota gal, she'll feel like a sweater. But the girls from Texas are just a little bit better. Mississippi's got all them Delta queens. Louisiana Cajun girls beat all I've ever seen. Ever kiss a girl from Kansas, you damn sure won't forget her. But the girls from Texas are just a little bit better.
But I was going to do this one I wrote with Chris Stapleton.
I love Chris, yeah.
And then Sheryl Crow recorded the song with me, and it's a story of the day that I broke up with my wife. We were in college and we weren't married, and she wasn't my wife. So I guess I broke up with my girlfriend. But it was one of those moments where stupidity takes over and runs the day. It was Valentine's Day, right? And we're on the side. We were driving down the road, and we used to love to drive out into the country and get out and lay on the top of the hood and drink wine and stare at the stars and blah, 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 romance, all that. And we got in a big fight, stupid kids. I mean, like, I don't know how else to put it, but took me 2 years to make up for that one. But she said, we were driving back into town, and back into Lubbock. We were, I don't know, 8 or 9 miles outside town. And she got so mad, she let me out. And I did. She did that last month too, by the way. we have a very fiery, wonderful relationship.
Nothing wrong with that.
But see if I can't get this right. So I was up in I was in Nashville, and like, you know, Aaron was just saying it's not a cubicle when you're riding with Stapleton, I guess. Yeah, that guy is a genuine article. Anyway, you can hear his phrasing. If you're a fan of his, you can hear it, right? I broke your heart on Valentine's Day. I guess fools like me made that way. Love like we're on fire. We're bound to crash and burn. Yeah, but somewhere underneath the ashes, once a heartache and the healing passed us, ran a light of your forgiveness
and a lesson lived and learned.
Uh-oh, it's about to get loud.
Everything you want from me is everything I want to be. But girl, I'll find a way somehow. Be a real love you've always dreamed of right now.
You're listening to Children of Song. I'm Brad Newman, and today my guest is the singer-songwriter, country music star, Pat Green.
I'm sorry, I didn't sing Girls from Texas.
No, that's all right. That was cool.
I have to be truthful. I really don't know how to play it very well.
Yeah, well, that's all right. Listen, that was soulful.
All the songs that after I had a really bad accident about 10 years ago, and all the songs after that, I don't feel very capable. I cut off my ring finger and my pinky, and they put them back on. Quite a nice job, but I can't feel them. Mm. And so after that accident, it's not that I didn't care about the songs as much as I didn't care about learning them that well. I'd rather just hire a really good guitar player.
Well, if you can do that, you know.
I'm just being honest. I mean,
you know, as we said earlier, people have described you as like the Springsteen of the Southwest, and you know, a heartland rocker, country music is needed.
Don't you feel like that's kind of silly?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, everybody, you know what, I think that's what people like to do, unfortunately.
Right.
I think any artist feels that. They want to know what you're sort of like. When you have to pitch shows, you have to, you want to say, listen, yeah, I'm bringing this unique thing that no one's ever heard before. But if you can't place it a little bit in someone's wheelhouse so they understand it, then they're not interested.
Right.
It could be the best thing in the world, and they're not interested.
Yeah.
So, and I think in some ways, it's the ultimate compliment to you. I mean, so listen, to say that I didn't like Springsteen growing up, I was more of a John Cougar guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to high school in Michigan, grew up in, I mean.
That's why I picked Don Gayman to be my producer. Whenever I got to finally spend all the money I wanted to make on a record, that's why I got Don.
Yeah, I mean, there's just something about that authenticity, that heartland kind of thing, feel.
But, yeah, and he was the guy. Don Gayman did all of Mellencamp's big record. He did Scarecrow, he did Mellencamp, he did John Cougar, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And that is why I wanted that man to make Wave on Wave.
Yeah.
And when it happened, it was my choice. And so it was either, you know, I did great. I had Greg Ladani, who did Toto and Don Henley and all this stuff. He did the first record that I was on the, you know, with, and, you know, I was like, wow, you know, get me the guy that makes these great records. That's so why. So I got Greg Ladani, God rest his soul. But and then I got Don Gayman, and then I did three records with him, and those records were the very defining moments of my life.
I mean, Wave on Wave,
Cannonball, Home.
Your biggest hit, really.
No doubt, without a doubt.
Can we get a little taste of it?
Oh, yeah, sure. I got to tune this back up. Sorry. Sorry to your engineer. So Wave on Wave, written in Birmingham, Alabama. It was a Walmart parking lot. And the bus was broke down. And I was, oh God, it was 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. As you can imagine, all the youth-filled angst that was in the back of a bus.
Sure.
Right. Anyway, I wrote the chorus first. I just had this image of, I think there's nothing more powerful in the physical world than water, as far as I know.
Sure.
I mean, obviously love and, you know, like I said, ambition, all those things are powerful too, but water just keeps coming up over and over, right? And how do you make that imagery come into life, right? And so I was thinking about what is it that saves you from whatever it is that's killing you,
right? Okay.
That was the essence of how that was the genesis of the storm. And in my case, it's the same. It's my wife, right? She is trying to kill me, and she's also trying to save me. So, yeah, she's a special thing. But anyway, mile upon mile, got no direction. We're all playing the same game. Oops. We're all looking for redemption. Just afraid to say the name. So got up now and pretending what we're seeking is the truth. I'm just looking for a happy ending, babe. All I'm looking for is you. And it came upon me a wave on way. Well, the reason I'm still here, yeah. Am I the one you were sent to save? It came upon me a wave on way. Anyway,
I love it.
Man, it was such a simple chorus, right? It was just so right there. I mean, it spit itself out.
Oh, it's so powerful, though. Right? And what I really like is that it grows, too.
That was Don. Don Gaiman did that.
Yeah.
That song, okay, so we recorded that song 3 different times. And I wanted it to be that, just the way I wrote it, just like that. That's exactly how I did it. And I wanted it to be this dirgy, kind of very cerebral, right there. And he goes, okay, we're going to start there and we're going to finish on the moon.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. I mean, that was the biggest fight I ever got. I left the studio 3 or 4 times.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And actually, I threw such a fit. I'm such a ass. But I made him put it on the record twice.
Really?
I did. If you look at the Wave on record, at the very end, you hear my version of it.
Oh, jeez. You are stubborn.
I stomped and
let's get back
moaned.
To that tribute album. Again.
Oh, gosh.
No. Because
so embarrassing.
Dance Hall Dreamin', a tribute to Pat Green. Not to confuse to the other Dance Hall Dreamin', obviously the earlier album. In that album, Jack Ingram does a nice job with that.
Black Mangrum.
I gotta tell you, he really builds in there. I mean, he took the notes.
He his delivery is perfect. It's spot on. We've been great friends since we were, in college. But my favorite Jack Ingram story was my wife was there too. So I'd gone to see Jack play at the Depot Beer Garden in Lubbock, and Corey, my wife, was my date, and. Another girl who I used to date was there, and her brother was like, it was like this covert op, and her brother was dancing with Corey, my wife, obviously my girlfriend back then, but while the other girl could come and hang out with me.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Dangerous things were afoot there at the Depot Beer Garden that night. Anyway, after the show was over, it was all, I'm not a runaround guy, but anyway. So I'm hanging backstage with Jack, and my wife, Corey, comes in the door and sees me. I'm shit-faced, and Jack is, too. We're just hanging, and he signed my guitar and all this stuff, and I was kissing his ass. And she was ready to go home, and she walks in the door and sees the two of us go, just hanging out, laughing and giggling, and she goes, "Fuck you, Pat Green, and fuck you too, Jack Ingram." That was the first time she ever laid eyes on him, and that was the first time I ever met him too. But I'm sure you're gonna have to.
Well, we'll do that.
Edit.
You know what's interesting about the tribute album is it is filled with mentors and mentees. There's another artist on the upcoming album who you've described as a brother from another mother. He sings Wrapped on the upcoming
WCG,
album.
WCG, hell yeah.
That's right.
William Clark Green.
Here's what he said and how you've meant to him.
I would not be a songwriter if it wasn't for him. I mean, so, and that's not me kissing his ass. That's just the truth. I mean, he was the everyday normal guy that, you know, played the Houston Livestock Rodeo. I mean, he was the reason we played guitar on the weekends in high school, you know? I mean, everybody wanted to be him. And I mean, just like, you know, it's awesome just to even, you know the guy. I remember I was on one of, like, the most impressed my friends have ever been is I was on this golf course in Tyler, Texas, and we heard that he was there just playing golf, you know, while we were. And we drove the golf cart past us, and he looked at me, and he goes, "Mr. Green." And I go, "Yes, sir." And he goes, "I'm the other Green." And I was like, "I'm well aware."
He's
a beautiful guy.
You know, you really touch their lives, you know, and in so many different ways that you don't even know, because, you know, he told me another story which I thought was pretty moving. He woke up, he had to do a radio show, and he had this terrible crick in his neck, and I guess he told you about it. And he needed to go to a doctor. Here's him telling the story.
I was sleeping in my truck back then, and I had this this crick in my neck that was just so terrible, and I couldn't even move my head. And he sent me to his doctor, and the whole time I was nervous because I couldn't afford the bill. But I didn't want to tell Pat Green no. You know, I didn't want to tell him that I was sleeping in my truck and I couldn't afford it. So I went to the doctor. At the end of the doctor visit, I told the doctor, I said, "Hey, you know, I don't have enough money to pay for this." And he goes, "Oh, no, Pat already took care of it." And I was like, "Are you serious?" He's like, "Yeah, Pat took care of the whole bill. He told me to charge his account." And I was like, "I couldn't believe it, you know?" So that's just the type of guy he is, man. Super nice. Always willing to help, lend a helping hand. And just like I said, man, it's just a pleasure to know him.
Yeah, he had to mow my yard next week. No, Dr. Mulhall, man, he's great. If you ever have a crick in your neck, he's the guy.
He's the guy, huh? Yeah. That's probably one of my favorite songs is Wrapped.
All right, yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah, wrote that at Willie's studio. He's got this, it's like a reverb room, right? So it's like a room, I don't know, about to call it a double bathroom, if you will, but it's all tile, floor to ceiling, everywhere. And there's a door. The only way to get into it is a 2x2 door. Like, you literally have to crawl through it, and it's halfway up the wall. You have to crawl through it, and it makes this amazing sound when you're in it, because it's all the sound waves just to bounce around like in a bathroom.
Sure, sure.
Anyway, so I was there with Walt Wilkins, and this was his idea, actually. It was his opening line, and anyway, kind of birthed. I might stand out in the wind, out on Mustang Island. I might step all night, hanging out with Hank Williams and crying. I've slept out on the sand so many nights that I can't remember. Love is love and life is hard. One undoes the other. This is Walt's line too, right here. This is great. A summer gold, winter blue. Wherever I am, whatever I do. Whoops, sorry. I'm wrapped in you.
You know, let's talk about the transition you had to make. I mean, here you were. You became this very established artist, label guy. Mm-hmm. A lot of pressure with that. I sure. read about how, you know, they wanted an album almost every year from you.
That was a lot for me. I'm not that, I create a lot, but I don't create very well a lot. It just happens. When the good stuff happens, it happens, right?
Right.
But it's not, I can go, I don't really care either, if I'm honest about it. And I'm going to keep spewing it, right? Why would I stop?
But it's hard, though, if you've got, like, you know, you got to do gigs like this, and you got to come talk to me, and you got to do concerts.
Yeah, but you're easy, Brad.
But it's hard to fit all that in. And then, you know, it's tough.
It is hard. It's hard to be creative on command.
And so you kind of got a little burned out and you took a little break. But that was good for you. Yeah, you were gone like about 6 years,
right? I did. And it was a wonderful time. And it fed the mechanism. It made the mechanism better. And it made, and thereby my life better. And I'm not going to lie. It's an incredibly enjoyable thing to go through life as an unemployed musician.
Right.
It's wonderful.
Well, but you've had other interests, too, and other ventures.
Sure.
I mean, come on. I mean, don't sell yourself too short here. I mean, you've had a very successful restaurant business. I hear your business around Dallas is like, does the second best bar business in that town.
It's kind of silly.
That's pretty good.
It's a little ridiculous.
You got something like 40 beers on tap, 32 locals, yeah, I read. Man. I don't know why those stats
Moving
always
on.
Stick with me.
No, yeah, it's wonderful. I got lucky, man. But I think that... luck appears when you work really hard, and I think we worked. I think our band worked incredibly hard for a very long time. And man, we never got to be, you know, Springsteen, but I got to tour with those guys. You know, I got to be on tour with Dave Matthews and Keith Urban and Kenny Chesney. I got to be on the biggest tours in the world. I'm fine with being the next door neighbor. You know,
yeah.
That's a good spot. It really is. Well, it's all the benefits, but I don't have to take all the pictures.
So listen, as we go out, I either want to hear a song from home.
Requests.
Well, this was the comeback album. This is the one you got to write and do on your own terms. This is a couple years ago.
But this also falls into all of those songs. This was the comeback, but I couldn't use these.
Right?
I'll try. Whatever. And if this doesn't work, you edit the hell out of it. I wrote this for my father.
That's a good way to end.
We are walking in the footsteps of our fathers, standing in the shadows of our mothers, trying to learn from those who came before us. I see the road maps and the lines upon their face, and as I look out on this crazy congregation, well, the truth is inside we're all the same. So come on, all my sisters and my brothers, let's go walk in, walking in the footsteps of our fathers. I'm the first to say that I don't know what I'm doing.
Good Daddy, timing for
Big
that.
Big Daddy's watching, man. Okay, anyway, there you go, Pops. Shit. He's the greatest. Talked to him yesterday. He just got through with cancer, and so he's fine. And God bless you, Pop.
Yeah. Pat Green, thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, I'm a sellout, by the way. I saw that note.
Well, no. We didn't get into that because the idea is that some of your fans are, you know, they were critical because of that. And I think...
Fine.
I wanted to, if we were going to go there. But no, that's not
you
me.
Can go there. No, I don't care.
Well, I think the idea is it's
idea
tough.
Is yes.
Really?
You have to. If you don't sell out, what's the point?
Well, I think there's a point here, and I would agree, and I've had to come to terms with this because I'm not a filmmaker. For a large part of my living, I make little features for television. But so here's the thing.
It makes your heart feel good, right?
But you are selling out a little bit, but you're getting your work out there. And so if you are so stubborn that you stay so true to who you think this artist is, then maybe no one ever gets to hear your work. And is that a tragedy?
I think the trick is I don't try to define that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who I am any more than you do. I mean, you know, it's like I wake up every day and I have some things that are very sacred to me. And as long as I stay there, then the rest of it is so simple. Mm. It really is. It's just be generous, be kind, do the right thing. You know, I've never been in a fist fight in my life. I've had my ass kicked plenty of times, but you know what I'm saying? It's sure. Like, you know, it's really not that hard. But if you're going to take on something like being in the public for a living, then be in the public.
Right.
And be part of that.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, I got lucky enough to get on a record label. I was on the sign. We were talking about this last night at dinner. I signed with Universal Records in 2001 or two. And, wow, what a ride.
Yeah.
What a ride. I got to go hang out with Donnie. Look, I mean, he was coming off of doing a Don Henley record, and he came and made my record next. I mean, holy crap, what a fun thing that was, right?
Yeah.
And I got to lose 3 Grammys.
Right.
More power to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just free of charge, man. It's just sitting in there somewhere.
Well, this has been fun. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate the candor and playing so much for us.
Sorry about Girls from Texas.
Oh, come on now. Special thanks to Aaron Watson. Check out his latest album, Vaquero, and also William Clark Green. If you haven't heard his latest effort, he's got a live album from the Green Hall, which is great. Shouldn't be missed. This has been a lot of fun. Again, the new album, Dance Hall Dreamin', a tribute to Pat Green. It's coming out April 5th, which is Pat Green's birthday. Thank you, sir.
Way past the midpoint, but thank you. Being lucky to make the next one.
I enjoy this a lot.
Before we let you go, we want to welcome you to the B-side. Here's a chance for us to dip outside the format and hopefully gain a little perspective. As we were closing things down, Pat shared some of his thoughts on the Me Too movement and described how many artists, regardless of gender, are often victims of overzealous fans.
I don't understand people that take advantage of other people very much. I'll screw up with the best of them, but I don't. Anyway, if I had a hashtag Me Too for every time some girl had groped and fondled and touched inappropriately me throughout my life, I'd have my own goddamn movement. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Dude, it's crazy. And listen, I don't understand that people don't. We are sexual. That's how we keep making people, you know. So anyway, that's a comment that is not meant for anything other than that. But I think that people that take advantage of women are horrible. I have 5 sisters, a wife, and a daughter, and I don't know what I would do to somebody that would ever harm my girls, but. We just need to relax, don't we? I mean, people are just so goddamn uptight.
They are, but we're all keyed up. I mean,
and we can't help it, right?
Well,
we can't help it because it's fed to us. We can't move 10 feet without our cell phones anymore.
No, it's supercharged. I mean, all the time.
It's crazy.
What about people? You said that they use their hands inappropriately. I mean, I think fans, obviously you can't do this without fans, but what are the things that are tough? I think fans don't necessarily understand you've done 15 dates in 17 days before you've come to them.
Yeah, I think the energy for being on stage is just that's just what you got, man. If you got that, you got it in spades, you know. And if you don't, you don't. But sometimes, yeah, man. I tell you what I hate is being responsible for other people's party. Right,
mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and then the show's over, and they want to, hey, get something going, and if we're gonna find a sire, come on, and you can, and I'll buy you. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, man, no, I'm going to bed. And not only that, but I'm old, and I'm usually in bed before the show starts. You know, and I get calls all the time. William Clark is wonderful. He calls me. He'll call me and say, Pat, I'm playing Fort Worth. I hear you're off. Come to Billy Bob's. I'm like, no. You have fun. I've been there, you know, and I've done that show many, many times. And,
right.
But enjoy. So I just, you know, I hear live music differently. I think the people that make music hear it differently. I do.
I'm looking for different things. I'm feeling different emotions, right? Because I know how you make it.
Right.
And so when I'm listening, I'm not listening necessarily. It's not the, it's really about the delivery and how you make something out of nothing.
Right.
Right. That is the intangible is the point that I'm looking for. That's what makes Lyle Lovett, Lyle Lovett. That's what makes Jerry Jeff, and that's what makes Robert O'Keefe, and that's what makes those people, is that they have something that other people don't have.
Right.
And then they get to give it to you. That's what I'm listening for.
I think, and I don't know, maybe this is a part of getting older too, but the stuff I like the most is when it's intimate. You can really hear it.
Right.
You hear the nuance. Like,
right.
I love this. This is such a gift that I'm 4 feet away from you and get to hear you play. But I love stuff like the Bluebird. I love where you can hear singer-songwriters and you can just really hear it. When it, you get in these venues and it just gets too loud sometimes. And
it's master. It's explosive.
You don't need it because you don't see the subtleties. You can't hear the builds. It's all wham, wham, wham. And then really wham.
Totally true. And I get lost in it because when it gets loud, I scream. I scream at the top of my lungs. And tonight, you know, thankfully it's the end of the run because I don't have much left. You know, my voice is tired. And, you know, like anybody this time of year, I'm kind of raspy. And, but we're gonna give them. We're going to give them what's left.
Hey, listen, thank you again so much. I appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thanks, Brad.
Next week, Gunnar Nelson co-hosts with me as we tackle the wildly entertaining Jason D. Williams. He sat down at the piano with us and revealed how he's come to terms with his biological daddy, the one and only Jerry Lee Lewis. It's an episode you won't want to miss. Children of Song, the podcast everyone's talking about. Till next time, I'm Brad Newman. Thanks for listening.
A lot of people think this is two hands. This is just the left hand. Now that was all done with the left hand.
I'm so jealous. Oh my gosh, that's awesome to hear.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to Fox News podcast shows ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or follow wherever you get your podcasts.